Okay, thanks a lot for the opportunity to talk about our work here. This is work with Dima Chitrin, Volodya Kazakov, Ilyan Zhong, and Dennis Müller, who is also here. As mentioned this morning, I will also talk about fishnet, Feynman graphs, but of a slightly different type. So basically everything you can glue from scalar four-point vertices, so for example, something like this, where one integrates over all these internal points, and I have these x coordinates on these external points. For the moment, these are off-shell, and well, yeah. As I said, these filled blobs just correspond to integration. This is point I over this coordinate I, and in general, these propagators here. Just these inverse squares. So I will talk about all graphs you can construct from these building blocks. And if you want to compare to what Lenz did this morning, you can draw a square graph of this type and identify the coordinates on all four sides. Then you end up with this four-point graph. So why are these graphs interesting? First of all, they have some nice properties. For instance, conformal symmetry, as Lenz also indicated already. I want to understand them also a bit as a toy model for n equals 4 supering Mills theory. And in that context, it's important that these graphs appear to be UV and I are finite, so even if I include loops, this conformal symmetry should not be broken. of course, I want to talk about integrability here. Already in 1980, these graphs were mentioned in the context of integrable models, so one can use them to define integrable statistical model. This was done by Samolodnikov. In 1980. Well, the integrability I want to see here is a bit more, is of a bit different nature, so it's not directly clear how to relate to this. He really looked at the statistical properties and computed the partition function for such graphs in a large, in the limit of large extension, but one already could see here that there is some integrability. And one particular important point, at least for our work here, is that these graphs are generated by a particular biscalar quantum field theory, and this is work by Volodyan, Kazakov, and also Cayetano, which is more recent, so one paper in 2015 and one in 2016. And well, what they did was to look at particular limits of so-called gamma-deformed n equals 4 supering Mills theory. So if you take the Lagrangian of n equals 4, I will always be interested only in the planar limit here. You can introduce these gamma deformation parameters. by making some of the products in the Lagrangian non-commutative. So one introduces such ij, ifij. One introduces these so-called gamma deformation parameters by making these products non-commutative. And then one ends up with this gamma deformed theory. And now one, what these people did was to take particular limits of this theory. And one can play with the different parameters here. One has three gammas. One also has the coupling. And in the simplest of these cases, where one takes these gammas to infinity, the Toft coupling to zero while keeping a certain ratio, namely this fixed. So two of these I will just set to zero to make it even simpler. This will be the new coupling constant of the theory. And I take this limit. And they find the following Lagrangian. So one can write things as
Can you repeat what exactly is the limit? If the lambda goes to zero,
we got there's a minus missing. Gamma or I goes to minus.
Sorry.
C fixed.
Yeah, right. This should be fixed. One ends up with a Lagrangian that only contains two of the complex scalars of the theory we started with. So I have these kinetic terms. And just one four-point interaction vertex. So they called this theory chi-FT4. This chi, because this limit is ends up within a chiral theory, I only have this vertex with this orientation and not the complex conjugate. And the interesting thing is that the amplitudes in certain correlators in this theory will be in one-to-one correspondence to these graphs. So there's only one particular graph for a particular amplitude given an ordering of the external scalars.
So what happens to the gauge symmetry?
What happens to the gauge symmetry?
Is there some gauge symmetry action applies?
Or no, this is all just the scalar theories. The gauge field is decoupled. In this most severe limit, so one can play with the parameters and include different particle species. I will comment on this in the end, but for the moment, I will only consider this.
You break the supersymmetry completely?
Yes. Exactly. So what I want to do now first is to consider correlators as Lenz also did this morning. So I look at correlators of this type, chi1 of xn, x1 to chi n of xn, and these chi's can be these fields up here, so ii element, ii1 vega, ii2 vega, ii1 or ii2. And as opposed to Lenz, I don't want to look at coincident coordinates here, so I will take xi unequal xj, so that I really have just these regular square lattices with different external coordinates. And then later, I want to go on shell and look at amplitudes. So as I said, the interesting fact is that here each of these correlators people see this here. Maybe not. So each correlator or amplitude is given by just a single scalar graph. So, yeah, I don't know. Of course, this is due to the orientation of this vertex. If I have a given order of external fields, I can only draw a single graph. Not always. I mean, I always have in the top row only phi 1 daggers. I mean, on the right, phi 2 daggers. So it's really.
That seems to. But can you have a phi 1 dagger next to a phi 1, for example?
Phi 1 dagger next to a phi 1? No. I don't think so. No. Okay. So the interesting thing is that this is a theory that comes out of these steps from integrability, from n equals positive permit theory, which is integrable. In particular, certain observables here are integrable, and it generates exactly these graphs as the observables.
Yeah? So is there any simple, so if you have the externalized order, can you say how many loops are in the graph without drawing the graph?
I guess one can work this out, since there's only one single loop order at which this graph lives. I haven't thought of an algorithm, but I think it should be possible. Okay, and the question is, what happens to the integrability in this process? So, for example, amplitudes here have integrability properties. Now I have amplitudes here, as we will see later, which are given by single graphs. What happens to the integrability? In order to think about this question, maybe I should briefly comment on integrability in n equals 4 superring-width theory, which in many cases can be traced back to Jungian symmetry. So this is a rational integrable model, which whose integrability is typically based on the Jungian. So let me briefly tell you what this is. The Jungian is a span over an extension of a V-algebra symmetry that's called level zero. So I have generators JA with a tensor product action of the standard form. So these are in some Lie algebra and obey these standard commutation relations. And one has a level one symmetry. So these two types of generators span this Jungian, whose action on some tensor product or whose co-product is usually given in this form. So it's a non-local symmetry. Here I have to sum over all ordered combinations of these Lie algebra generators. And these generators obey these commutation relations. So here I have J hat, and here I have the Lie algebra generator J. For example, for color ordered tree amplitudes in N=4 Super-Mills theory, we have the statement that these J, which are now elements of the Lie algebra PSD2,2/4, and also these J hat annihilate these tree amplitudes, and this is the Youngian over PSD2,2/4. As we already noticed last week, many interesting results come from people with a first name starting with the J, and this was also found by three people with the J, namely by Jan, James, and Johannes. So it's not trivial that this actually can work. And one point why this is not trivial is because these color order tree amplitudes are actually cyclic. And this definition of this level one generator typically breaks the cyclicity because I have to choose an origin on my spin chain or on these external legs of the amplitude. So in order to be compatible with this cyclicity, I should look what happens if I shift the indices, the boundaries in the sum here. So if I say this is the sum from 1 to n, then I want to see what happens if I do the sum from 2 to n plus 1 and compare this to the sum from 1 to n. And what one finds is this result. So I guess I'm missing a J1D here. So if I look at this result, then I don't have to bother about the second term because this is proportional to a full level zero generator, which annihilates my amplitudes. So this is zero on amplitudes. And this here is the dual Coxeter number, which is fortunately zero for particular cases, namely, for instance, for PSD2,2/4, which is the case of N=4 Super-Engmeld theory, but also for OSP6/4, which is, for example, the case of ABJM. So somehow here one sees the special properties of these theories that make this Youngian symmetry of tree amplitudes work. And one question one may ask, or in general one may think that this is an obstruction to construct such Youngian invariant amplitudes for smaller algebras, or just algebras different from these with vanishing dual Coxeter number. So is this necessary for amplitude integrability? In particular, in this context, this is interesting because now I've shown you that one can get this biscalar theory from N=4 Super-Engmeld theory, but there was already this question. The supersymmetry is, for instance, completely broken, and the Lagrangian has only the standard conformal symmetry, SO2.4. So if their amplitudes in this theory should have some Jungian symmetry, it should probably be over this algebra. But one may wonder what happens to this argument here.
Also imagine abandoning cyclicity somehow. In other words, you know, QCD, you have quark amplitudes too, which don't have the same cyclic.
Sure. That's true, but what I want to do now is to look at the simplest example, if at least in this coordinate space, which is the momentum space box integral or the cross in this space, and obviously, this graph has a cyclic symmetry, right? So
no, I'm not saying it's the direction you're going. It's some other direction.
That's true.
To lose the cyclicity requirement and maybe allow for other algebras.
Yeah, right. There could be amplitudes that are not cyclic and still Jungian invariant. Yeah. That's true. But in this case here, one might think that this is a problem. So let's look at the simplest example of such a fishnet graph, which is this cross given by this integral. And as we heard already this morning, and I just want to state this a bit more explicitly, this integral has conformal symmetry. So at least we have a good candidate for this level 0 Lie algebra symmetry. And let me just write down the generators. So these are my generators JA, which generate the conformal algebra. And in order to have invariants of these, I want to fix the delta to be 1. Okay, so a natural question is, how about this level 1 symmetry? And since we've seen how to build the level 1 generators from the level 0 generators, I can just try to act on the integral, right? So I write down one of the level 1 generators, the level 1 momentum. And in fact, the structure of the conformal symmetry makes it sufficient to check one of these. I get all the others from the commutation relations then. And if I write out explicitly this non-local sum that I wrote down before, I get the generator of this form. So let me call this p hat bi for bilocal, because I have this bilocal sum here. So I can just try to act on the integral and see what I get.
So this is now the SO2.4, yeah?
Yes. Right. So I construct a level 1 generator for this level 0 algebra.
Should this have some mu index on it?
This should have a mu, sorry. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So this is a level 1 generator for SO2,4 and n equals 4. You get an additional bilocal term given by two of the supercharges Q and Q bar in this generator. So I can act on this cross integral, and what I find is this. So I get almost the momentum generator at position j summed over all positions, just multiplied by an additional factor of j. Yeah. So if I define p hat to be this contribution plus. This with this Vj for the cross chosen as minus j, then I have a proper symmetry. So I have p hat i4 is 0. Yeah? A nice thing is that this is actually an allowed deformation of the representation. It's still the same algebra, I just modify the representation a bit, and this corresponds to an automorphism of the Youngian algebra. So this is an allowed deformation I can do here. And the second nice thing is that this choice that I found by requiring this invariance actually restores my cyclicity. As I said, if I look at this graph, it obviously has some cyclic symmetry, so the generator should be cyclic. So this restores cyclicity that for only this part, which we would only have taken for the n equals 4 tree-level amplitudes, would be violated because now the dual Coxeter number of the conformal algebra is non-vanishing. So I can restore the cyclicity by adding this piece to the generator, which is, in the language of Youngian symmetry, a totally fine.
Yeah, on the higher level generators don't annihilate.
Why not?
Or I don't know. That's my question.
No. This. What I write down here is called evaluation representation of the Youngian symmetry. It's in the language of Youngian symmetry, it's totally consistent, and the higher level generators should follow as before. Yeah.
This sort of corresponds to sticking something, shifting d sub I by something?
In the case of this level 1 momentum generator, one can actually translate it in modifying the dimension. That's true, yeah.
So is that just it? Is it a unique choice how to do it or not?
Here, yes.
Is it a unique
choice? For this.
There is nothing else you can add.
Well, you can chip by constant.
Already cyclicity gives you this unique choice. Okay, what you can always do is an overall shift by a total momentum. So what, you have one free parameter that you can never fix, but otherwise it's fixed. So what this gives you is a second order differential equation for i4. And, well, of course, one may ask whether this is an accident because this box integral is rather pathologic. So we want to understand this now for more generic graphs. I know now that the most elementary building block of these graphs has the Jungian symmetry, and I want to understand what's the pattern behind it. And for this, the most useful is to use a slightly different representation of the Jungian, what I wrote down, these level 0 and level 1 generators. It's called first realization. What I now want to use is the so-called RTT realization. Well, which is actually nothing complicated, it's just the fact that one can collect the generators into a generating function, which is this monodromy. So the monodromy depends on the spectral parameter, and in the expansion I get as the first orders the level 0 and level 1 generators, and all the higher orders I can get from iterative commutation of these generators with each other. So I just use a generating function for the symmetry, and now the algebra, these commutation relations that I wrote down before, is defined by a Young-Baxter relation, the so-called RTT equation, which gives constraints on these monodromy matrices. So here, these 1 and 2 denote different spaces. I just schematically want to write this down. So this now defines the algebra, and this R is Young's R matrix, which acting on two spaces, 1 and 2, is just the identity plus U and the permutation operator on these spaces. So this R matrix, Young found in the context of scattering of bosons in a in a delta function potential, and that's where he found the Young-Baxter equation. That's also why the Jungian is called Jungian, because this is the simplest solution to the Young-Baxter equation. So this is just a different way to define the Jungian. So I want to use this monodromy, so I should better write it down a bit more explicitly. I can build it up from a series of Lux operators that act on different spaces, and all of these depend on two variables now. So these are some inhomogeneity parameters, and these are conformal dimensions. And just to introduce already some graphical notation, each Lux operator I can understand as such an arrow, and if I multiply two of them, I connect them by this red line. I will need this later for some graphical proof. So I should tell you what this Lux operator is. Uh, This K is the physical space, so it will correspond to the leg of the correlator. And this alpha beta are matrix indices in an auxiliary space. I also multiply this in the auxiliary space, so this is this contraction here. It depends on these two parameters, delta K, and I can write it as the identity plus, okay, and just schematically, what enters here. These are now my conformal generators, so this differential representation that I wrote down before of the conformal algebra acting on leg K with conformal dimension delta K. This differential representation, and these ones I can obtain using some 6D gamma matrices and projecting them on one of the blocks. And these Lux operators were already, to a large extent, investigated in a rich paper by Chicherin, Derkachov, and Isaev.
Why do you show these alternating colors? That suggests that every other LN is different from, that the uneven ones are different from what I misunderstand.
The blues are the L's, and this, the red, means just that I contract these two. So here I have open indices. I think this will become more clear when I use it on the diagrams. Yeah. So this is the physical space. Okay, and finally, let me also introduce some more useful notation. So each of these Lux operators depends on two variables that I can understand as inhomogeneities in this spin chain and the conformal dimension, but it makes sense to slightly change variables here and to introduce these combinations UK plus being UK plus delta K minus 4 over 2, UK minus UK minus delta K over 2. And, well, now I can alternatively write these L's as depending on UK plus and UK minus. And in order to make things even more compact, I will introduce the notation that the square brackets of delta K plus, delta K minus, just mean U plus delta K plus, U plus delta K minus. And this will be my arguments of the Lux operators later. And I can also use that this is U plus delta K, just to save some space. So now I introduced this language to formulate the Youngian. And if you remember, the monotomy was just a function f of u plus the level 0 plus the level 1 generators. So the Youngian invariant In obeys in this language the equation, and here u just the vector u just means all the n parameters. So this gives you some function times I n. So it's an eigenfunction of this monodomy, and that there is not a zero just comes from the fact that there was a one in the expansion of the monodomy, right? So 1 plus generators that annihilate this thing. So it's just a reformulation of the symmetry. I can write this down again. So this was f of u times 1 plus actually get this one over. So if these annihilate this thing, there will be this F of u that remains. Okay, so
the fact that like level 0 and level 1 you can flip, or in the case of n equals 4 we can decide what is conformal and dual conformal. You can start, that's the same thing here. You can also reformulate your...
Yes. In the paper we did this. What we did was to start from the dual conformal K, and one can show that one can write it as a level 1 generator in momentum space acting on amplitudes. Okay, if I want to show now things for generic graphs, I need two important relations. So the first is this intertwining relation. And yeah, this is basically what underlies this whole construction, namely that the propagator of which all the graphs are built obeys this relation. So now I use this notation that I introduced, the lux depending on two parameters. And the second one, delta 2, delta plus 1. The important thing is that the first argument here and the last argument here just differ by 1. And now I can pull this propagator through this product. And I exchange this delta plus 1 and delta here. So I get delta plus 1, delta 1.
So are these arguments the uk plus and uk minus, or the uk and the delta?
Yes, this is now, what I write here is u plus delta and u plus delta 1. So I have an overall spectral parameter that's equal in all of these, and I shift it by different parameters. And these are the algebraic relations that are that underlie this construction. So I can use this now to put the monodomy around a graph and to pull it through the graph which corresponds to this relation. I end up with a monodomy that acts on nothing, and this is just a trivial function.
Is this like Young-Buck relation, or where does this come from?
This?
Yeah.
It's not exactly, I mean, this is not an operator, it's a, I think there's a larger theory behind it where you can make this a proper R matrix. And this is just a special, the R matrix at a special value. But yeah, this is some kind of Young-Baxter intertwining relation. Yeah. So graphically, if I have here this propagator 1, 2, then a lux operator that acts on the propagator, I crosses this line. Here I have two that act on it, one on leg two and one on position, one on position one and one on position two, and I multiply them. That's why I use this. And this is equal to the same thing where the lux operators don't act. Don't act on on my propagator. And yeah, I can write down the arguments here. So this has delta 2, delta plus 1, delta 1, yeah, similarly here. So if I have something like this, where a lux operator doesn't act on anything, in the end I have to get rid of them somehow, because in this relation there's no monodomy left anymore here. So what I need is a second kind of relation, and that's the action on the vacuum. So one can show that these lux operators with particular values for the arguments. So these two arguments have to differ by two. When I act with this just on one, I can write it like this. And well, my notation was that this is just u plus 2. And the same for the transposed. And this is just transposition in the physical space. So the physical space was of these was given by the conformal generators in the differential representation. So this will just correspond to partial integration under these integrals from these vertices. And if I act with this on one, I get actually the same.
So, okay. Florian, so the delta u plus minuses, so when you write, just to understand, so when you put it, what is it, delta plus? I think that's my question. Delta plus is delta plus capital delta minus.
So what I have here is u plus delta 1. That's this argument.
No, plus and minus, according to your definition.
Well, I don't have to write plus. In my bracket, I have no plus now here, right?
So just, don't write a plus when there is...
I just denote the left argument by plus and the right by minus here.
The brackets is just u plus that.
Exactly, yeah. It's just shorthand.
Yeah, but is that now a delta plus you're inserting?
It's just a variable. I call it delta here, I call it delta plus there. Here I call the left delta plus, the right delta minus.
So plus has nothing to do with uk plus. So why did you define UK plus and UK minus together?
That's a different plus and one.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, if I set the UK is equal here, then I have U plus something else, right?
No, I think my question was why did you define the UK plus and UK minus? I think you haven't used it.
Just to make clear that I can trade these two variables for two more symmetric ones, which are shifts of u.
Okay.
Yeah. Obviously, not to make clear. Yeah. Okay. Now we had to do some work to set up this formalism. Now let's actually use it. And the best is to use it maybe on the example of which we already know that it works, and which is maybe also the most pedagogic and illustrative thing, so the single cross. So what I want to do now is to act with this monodromy, four-side monodromy. It acts on the four external legs and depends on some parameters. I will now just write down the parameters. You will quickly figure out what the pattern is to choose them. So the monodromy is built up of these Lux operators acting on the legs 4, 3, 2, and 1. And I choose the arguments in this way. So if I want to draw a picture of this situation, I have here 1, 2, 3, 4. I choose here the arguments 1, 2, 3, 3, 4, 4, 5. And by acting with Lux operators on the propagators, and it's now crossing these lines and multiplying the Lux operators in this way. So this is the monodromy. Here it's open. What I want to do is to pull this through the graph so that I end up with this function f of u here. So let me write this down. I collect these again in the symbol t of u, just to not to write the sequence of Lux operators again. The integral is just what we've seen before, x1 0 square, x2 0 square, x3 0 square, x4 0 square. and what I now want to do is to use this identity, namely that this is just proportional to the identity matrix, to generate an additional Lux operator. Yeah? So this is just one. I use the second identity there. So I introduce a Lux operator that acts on my coordinate 0. Yeah? So this is my integration variable here. So I introduce L0, 2,0 transposed times 2 to the -1. And this is just the identity according to this rule here. Yeah, I put the 2 on the other side, then I have just the identity matrix here. So I don't do anything. Okay, what I now want to do is to partially integrate this so that it actually acts on the integrand. So I do partial integration, which means just this transposition. I pull this 2 to the -1 out to the front. D4x0. And now let me write things out one more time. The t, I just keep as it is. I just want to show which ingredient I need now. And after the partial integration, this t is removed. The argument stays the same. So I have this L0, 2,0 acting on this integrand. Yeah, so let me draw the graph corresponding to this picture. Again, I have here the same inhomogeneities. And now what have I done? I still have these Lux operators here, but I've inserted one that actually acts on all of these integration points here. Yeah? So I have to cross all the 4 legs in my vertex. So, and they are multiplied in this way. So the argument of this is just 2,0. Yeah? So what I now want to do, I want to identify this relation here. So 2 Lux operators and 1 propagator. I want to pull all the propagators through this monodomy. So I have L1, L0, and X10 here. So what I take are these things, and I use my intertwining relation. So using this identity 1, I can write this as L4 So I keep these, and the only thing I do is I pull through this propagator, and in turn I have to exchange this and this argument according to my relation there. So I write 0,2 L0 2,1. And what remains here is x2 0 square, x3 0 square, x4 0 square. Yeah? So I really just employed this relation to pull this through. Okay, what I notice now is that this L1, the 1 indicates the physical space, so the space where the derivatives of the conformal generator act, doesn't act on anything anymore, right? Here's no propagator left. So, and the arguments are fortunately differing by 2. So I can use this identity. I can replace it just by a factor. So according to identity 2, this is just 2 times the identity. Yeah. So let me draw the picture here. What have I done? I actually used my intertwining relation, which allows me to pull the loop through a propagator on this loop here. Yeah? I pulled this through. I had this this Lux operator L1, which was acting on nothing, so I could set it to the factor times the identity. And the picture I end up with is this. Yeah? Okay. And now I have to do just moves of this type. So I pull a loop through a propagator here and here and here. And I end up with Lux operators that act on nothing anymore. I can replace them by certain factors. So if I do similar things here, what I get in the end, I will pick up other factors. In this case, the 2 just cancels with this 2, but I will have factors that actually remain in the end. So if I do this, I end up with this. And yeah, for example, this was just u plus 3. So I have a polynomial in u, which is my function f of u times i4, which means that I have actually a Young invariant. So this is probably the best example, and since all the bigger fishnet graphs are just built from these crosses, also the crucial one, because actually I can identify two steps in this process, namely this one and the one we have just the blue line crossing this and this line, and similarly show, or just from this argument, this identity. So if I have 1, 2, 2, 3, so the first and the last argument here are the same, and I have some graph here. Where the Lux operators here now act like this. So you see it's really part of the picture up there. And I can write this just like this, where the arguments of this Lux operator are now 2,2. So this Lux, this is just one Lux acting on the 2 zero legs here. Yeah.
How do you see cyclicity here? Because the FU doesn't look really cyclic. Down by 1. Just get something in
time. Okay. I didn't want to discuss this in detail. It's a bit more tricky, maybe. But you can also cyclically shift the monodromy, and you get an equivalent eigenvalue problem with a different eigenvalue. But yeah, you can also see the cyclicity in this way, but you need some more elements for the proof. Yeah. It should be the same thing in different language, and you can do this. Okay, here I have just one piece of a larger graph, and I want to argue that I have this identity. And if I have this identity, one can easily see that if I look at generic fishnet graphs, so let me draw some example I could have more rows here, but I don't want to draw too large picture. So if I have such a graph and I draw my monodromy around this graph, like this. And I attribute, and now you easily see the pattern, so I just put the same inhomogeneities on this line here. When I turn right, I add 1. When I turn left, I subtract 1, so that everywhere here I have the same structure, 3, 4, 2, 3, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sorry, one is missing. Well,
I guess that one should be 3, 4 on the bottom.
Yes. Sorry. Right, thanks. Exactly, so yeah, you easily see the pattern, which from the cross was maybe not unique. Okay, and now you see that I can use this identity to start here somewhere in a corner. I pull this corner through so that I have a loop here that I can again pull through. I can go through to the next vertex and so on, so that I can iteratively pull the monomy through the whole graph. And, well, I will end up with some eigenvalue function. It will not always be the same, but it will just be a function of u, which means that I have a Jungian invariant in this formalism.
Does every graph have an individual distinct eigenvalue?
Every graph has an individual distinct.
Is there any physics in this eigenvalue?
No, I don't think there's physics. I think maybe one could even set it to 1 for a particular graph by redefining the Lux operator, probably. Yeah. So, it's not physics.
But I should think about it as a differential equation for that graph.
Yes.
This relation.
I can always expand the monotomy in terms of the level 1 generators. This is just more convenient for the proof. But I can expand the monotomy in terms of the level 1 generators, and then I have always this. The Lie algebra generator first, and this additional bilocal generator, which gives me a further constraint, yeah. And which is a second order differential equation.
But doesn't my function drop out of that differential equation? Because you also defined f as an overall factor on C4.
I don't need the f of u for this differential equation, yes. That's right. This is just bookkeeping for this proof. The differential equation I see most easily, really, as I did before, for the box using this level 1 generator, writing down explicitly the derivatives acting on 2 different legs and summing over all.
But to know exactly what the coefficients are in the differential equation, you have to somehow expand out this bracket-free factor and collect.
Well, for this kind of graphs, I didn't write it down. You actually have a generic expression given the graph what the eigenvalue should be. But what I want to do now is to slightly generalize this.
To answer this question, I guess the point would be that this is not just a differential equation, but a whole matrix of differential equations, isn't it?
That's true. In principle, yeah, you have different generators.
And since you have an eigenvalue, it means that all off-diagonal elements of this differential equation matrix are zero. So they are perfect differential equations on their own. But then there is one diagonal piece which gives you the eigenvalue. So out of these n squared equations, one of them carries the eigenvalue, and you may or may not care about it. But that's not really part of the Jungian, well...
I think it has no physical meaning.
It's more like the center of the atoms.
But you will have these local inhomogeneities also when you go to the level 1 Jungian, right? I mean, what
yes.
Were the J's before? They will now be more complicated depending on the graph, I guess, right? The local terms you have to add in the level 1. And they're a function of these labels that you have.
Yes, but there's a simple relation to get the V's out of these inhomogeneities, mm-hmm. the V's, these VJ parameters in the level one Young. And so it's but really just summing over these.
Just by looking at the geometry, you know what the VJs are.
Yes. Every graph has this particular set, depending on how many turns you have to make, of inhomogeneities. But it's easy to see how to get them. And yeah, it's easy to translate in this level one generation. So one, maybe first side curiosity. Is that I can take such a graph and this kind of boundary structure I will call regular, and now I want to slightly generalize it to irregular boundaries. So suppose I take just as an example such a graph, then well, I could also insert propagators that are not integrated over, yeah? So I can add lines like this. I probably also want a vertex here. What I can also do is I can identify three of these coordinates here. So the non-filled blobs are not integrated over. It means just I identify the coordinate. Yeah, and I can do similar things here. One thing I can even do is to generate such a five-point vertex of this type. So here I just add three propagators which multiply my function. I will tell you why this is interesting. And just one slightly non-intuitive thing. So far, everything looked just like square lattices, right? So I always had squares here, except for this. And the best way to understand this is to think of so you draw a square lattice on a piece of paper, but this one you should actually draw on a paper which has a cut. So you should think of this. I cut my paper, and it's like a Riemann sheet on which I draw. Then again, a square lattice. It's just these two corners are not identified. So in principle, this is really based on the square lattice structure. And what I want to say is that, yeah, again, in this case, I can introduce Lux operators, and I have to do it in this way. They act on all these propagators here, and so on. So I connect them like this. And I give them inhomogeneities, 2,2. This one here is 3,0. And now it also makes sense that we actually have two arguments here, right? So far, we basically had just one free parameter, but now the difference can be more than two. And intuitively, this makes sense if I remind you that this was, the notation was delta plus delta minus, and the conformal dimension I can get out like this. Yeah, so the dimension always corresponds to the numbers of scalars that end in these points. So this labeling somehow makes sense if you think of it in this way. Okay, so let me now finally quickly say something about amplitudes for which I need this generalization. So now I actually want to go on shell, and I don't want to understand this anymore as coordinates of my correlator, but as region momenta, as Lenz also said this morning, these axes I can also understand in this way. So now I should be region momenta with Ti. I guess my convention is slightly different from Lance's, defined in this way. So on shell means that I set Pi square or Xi I plus 1 square to 0. And the nice thing now is that these intertwining relations that I've shown you before respect respect a certain replacement. Namely, I can replace the propagator by this delta function that causes my momentum on shell. So that means that this construction also works for this type of bridge. Yeah, so I can, instead of using the propagator as a bridge connecting the vertices, also use this delta function. And this is very convenient because now I can look at another example. So let's look at the double cross integral. I have two integration points. And, well, of course, now I want to think in terms of amplitude, so I draw the dual graph, which also has these four-point vertices. Well, and now my momenta are off-shell, but I know I can introduce these more generalized boundaries. I know I can use these delta functions. So what I can actually do is to introduce such bridges into my graph, which force all these momenta on shell, because I have this delta function constraint, and still I can show the Jungian symmetry in this way.
So why do you want to put in the bridges in the corners instead of just thinking of the corner guys as on shell?
Instead of thinking,
why do you care to split that corner into two massless lines?
Well, I care.
Does it make any difference?
It's the same diagram. It's just in our formalism, it's natural. Everything is glued out of four vertices. It's true. It's the same diagram. Just to formally show things, I rather should have this square lattice structure. So, this is x1, x2, this is p1, and now this momentum is on-shell, and I actually have an on-shell graph. So, like this, I can argue that also these on-shell amplitudes Jungian invariant. Okay, let me come to the end by indicating some generalizations of this construction.
So you're going to tell us the differential equation obeyed by the double cross?
You write down this level one generator that I showed you before,
yeah,
and you act on the function. Yeah. That's the differential equation. Now, of course, you can sit down and express things in terms of conformal cross ratios, make it nicer. We could work this out, but so far we mainly understood for which graphs it works and not what the implications are. It's not so clear. But this should give some additional constraints.
So what is the generic form it's going to have? Double differential operator on the... which can be re-expressed in terms of the various cross ratios. Is this a homogeneous relation, or does it end up having a source term?
Same function on the right hand side.
both of them are homogeneous and one of them is not homogeneous. Right. The trace of that
I think in general it should be homogeneous.
P is off diagonal, so it's zero.
I mean, I guess only one of these differential equations is new, right? It's only one of the generators gives the new information because the others I can get from algebra. It, as I said before, it's enough to check, for example, this level one momentum. Yeah, and I think this should be a homogeneous equation.
Because there's also a story that these things are generically elliptic. Elliptic things often obey Picard-Fuchs equations. Is this a Picard-Fuchs equation? How is it related to that story?
At the moment, yeah, it's not clear to me yet. We are really trying to understand this better, and I would be happy to discuss more about this.
But also this Youngian, because if I just think about it as a graph, the graph doesn't have any Youngian symmetry. It's too conformal invariant. It's not even supersymmetric. So it's a different Youngian than Youngian n equals 4. This is not an amplitude. It's a component amplitude, but it's not even supersymmetric.
In n equals 4?
What?
If you think of it as an amplitude in n equals 4.
But what do you mean? That this is not a full amplitude in n equals 4.
He's thinking of an amplitude in this chi ft 4.
Well, yes,
no,
but that's
not,
in which sense it's Youngian.
Yeah, that's what I want to say. It's a bosonic Youngian. You just have a different underlying algebra. Certainly this graph then has the symmetry as we can...
And I think it's not clear how this is related to the PSU224.
Yeah. No, this is definitely not simple. I guess one could probably find this relation somehow, but because of this limit, which is really a bit singular, it's not so easy. Okay, just briefly some comments on...
And so it's not understood how much this fixes the answer either.
No, it's not understood.
But for the box, you checked it, right?
Well, it works, sure.
It works, but then the question is, how many degrees of freedom does it leave, if that's all you know? I thought the idea was to eventually use this to work out what these integrals are.
This is the idea, yes, eventually.
And you have to know how much it leaves unfixed, too.
Of course, yeah.
What's the kernel of the operator look like?
Of course, yeah. First, we had to understand which graphs actually have which symmetry. Sure, this is the most interesting point, probably. Yeah. So let me say some things about generalizations for the off-shell part. Not so clear how this works on-shell. So if I go to D dimensions, my propagator should be something like this, e to the I kx over k square, which gives me something like this. So, for instance, if I go to d equal 3, my propagator is this, and I can build similar graphs using scalar 6-point vertices, so I have this triangulation of the plane, and one can show similar relations for these Feynman diagrams. So we have a 6-point vertex, and this corresponds to one of the limits one gets from AVGM theory. On the other hand, one can go to 6 dimensions where the propagator takes this form, and one can build similar graphs from hexagons. Too much. And here I have a 3-point vertex. Which also gives such Youngian invariant integrals. So here one sees that all three of these regular tilings of the plane give Youngian invariants. Which at least indicates that there is more of a story in dimensions different from 4.
Is that D equals 6-1 based on a twisted version of a supersymmetric theory or not?
It's not here to me.
It doesn't smell like it.
It smells, you know, like it, but...
It does?
You don't think?
I don't know.
Well, I don't know the theory, so I shouldn't say anything. It's just, yeah, if you get this from AVGM, you get this version from N equals 4. Okay. I don't know. There's one paper by two people from Weizmann Institute who discuss these graphs and this phi to the 3 theory in more detail, but I don't think they have a supersymmetric.
Or maybe it comes out of a non-Lagrangian theory or something.
I don't know, possibly, yeah, in 660. It's quite late already. Just one final comment. So, also in D equals 4, one can do more things and include other particle species. For instance, scalars and fermions. And again, this goes back to a different limit of Kazakov, Burdagan, and Cayetano. So again, you could do this story, gamma twisted, and take a different limit now. It gives you a Lagrangian, which basically has two different types of scalars and two Yukawa vertices. So you have some by the 4 and Kramer vertices, so you can actually build graphs from 3-point and 4-point vertices with these properties, and like this one can include more and more fields or different kinds of fields from N equals 4 and find other interesting theories. So Lance last week had this onion model of gauge theory simplicity, where in the middle there was planar N equals 4, and at least when it comes to integrability, it seems to make sense to increase the resolution a bit, and for example to look at these limits where the simplest case is just the pi scalar theory, then you get something like this with scalars plus fermions and other limits which all seem to give integrable theories with amplitudes with interesting properties.
Are there other limits that are IR protected besides these two, the scalar and the
good question. I guess, you would be the first person I would ask whether these graphs are...
Yeah, Volodya has asked me about this one.
Yeah.
With the external fermions, that looked fine. But I don't know what some of the other less extremely twisted or other choices of the gammas leaves.
It's not clear to me, but it seems it's not only the simplest model which has these properties. Okay, thank you. Sorry for...
A few questions, but if there is anything pressing, maybe we can take a few. Well, if there are no questions, maybe we can thank Florian again.